Football Weekly Podcast. Thank you so much for being with me. I'm your host, Arthur Arkish, and excited. We've got a couple big podcasts in store for you this week because it's Super Bowl week, and we got to go big. So I thought we'd start today by visiting with Hub Arkish, who is, of course, down in Houston taking in his 30-something straight Super Bowl. And want to see how this one thus far is stacking up against the many others that he has been in attendance for. We'll check in with Hub shortly. Before we do, I thought I'd share a few quick thoughts about the Senior Bowl, where Pro Football Weekly was also in attendance last week. I've got a few guys that I think helped their cause. I hope you were following us at ProFootballWeekly.com and checking out all of our notebooks and other items from the week in Mobile, Alabama. But if not, I will give you a little bit of a refresher, a quick one, and also have some thoughts on the GM hirings from over the weekend. Of course, the Colts tab Chris Ballard, the 49ers shocked the NFL world by signing hiring John Lynch, and that still sounds a little weird to say it, but I've got thoughts on both of those moves as well. So before we dive right in, and since I did mention, I believe there's going to be a second Pro Football Weekly podcast dropping, I hope at some point on Thursday, February 2nd, I have Ty Schalter has agreed to come on and help me preview the game. I'm working on getting one more guest so we could just do a little bit of X's and O's and matchups and all that fun stuff. Because with Hub today down in Houston, I thought we'd just kind of get the pulse on what things are like down there. He was in attendance for Roger Goodell's press conference today. That's always a spectacle. And he was there for media night, his favorite night of the year. No, I'm kidding. So we'll get to all of that here briefly. Before we do, I have to refamiliarize you with our awesome sponsor, Loot Crate. On a quest for epic gear, housewares, and collectibles this holiday season, Loot Crate offers an epic range of pop culture items for less than $20 a month. Whether you're shopping for the geek in your life, or if you are that geek, Loot Crate is the best surprise you know is coming. Every month there's a different theme and new exclusive items you can only get with Loot Crate. Treat yourself every month or give the gift of geeking out to a friend or loved one. Roll up your sleeves and get ready to celebrate some of pop culture's most put-together franchises. February's hands-on theme is Build and features Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, Batman, Lego Dimensions, and Tetris. And as always, our monthly t-shirt and pin. You have until the 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific to subscribe and receive that month's crate, and when the cutoff happens, that's it, it's over. Make sure to head to www.lootcrate.com/Shaw and enter the code Shaw, S-H-A-W, to save $3 off any new subscription today. All right, thank you once again to Loot Crate. We appreciate them being one of our wonderful sponsors on the podcast. And as I mentioned, I was down in Mobile last week, had a good time. It was a quick in and out trip. I only took in the Tuesday and Wednesday practices, so I saw four in total. And it was fun. You know, it was my third one. And I think in some ways, this one may have had the least amount of buzz going in. You didn't have your Carson Wentz, kind of the, you know, the small school quarterback that everyone wanted to see was measuring up to the top overall discussion, or some of the other big names, I guess, that have been in Mobile my last 2 years. There were less of them. When you take out a Deshaun Watson, a Jonathan Allen, a Taco Charles, and all these other guys, Dede Westbrook, that decided not to attend, you know, and you add that to the fact that, what, we're going to have maybe 25 underclassmen making up the first round of the draft in April. Not a ton of star power, if you will, but as there are every year, there were certainly some guys that are going to turn into future stars, and it was fun to check all that out. So I don't think that a guy can really hurt his cause by agreeing to go to one of these senior all-star games, or these postseason all-star games, I should say. That's what I've been told from NFL evaluators who are much smarter and more in the know than I am. So I kind of focused on guys who I think helped their cause. And once again, if you want to check out all of our work from the week, make sure you head over to ProFootballWeekly.com. It's all still up. But I did do kind of a top 10 list of the guys that I thought helped themselves. So not in any particular order, but just guys that flashed to me. And a lot of these names that you will have heard, because I think they were sort of jumping out at a lot of people. But I'll just kind of preface it by saying, no, the quarterbacks didn't excite a whole lot. Yes, Nate Peterman did impress me. No, I don't think he's the next Dak Prescott. But there were, I think, some of the pass catchers for the quarterbacks were of particular interest. You know, you've got a Zay Jones from East Carolina and a Cooper Kupp, of course, from Eastern Washington, two guys who were remarkably productive at a lower level of competition in college and just weren't sure how they were going to compete against some of the – there were some big-time DBs here, especially from the SEC and the Big Ten and Desmond King and Jordan Lewis and some of those types of players and, you know, certainly Tre'Davious White and Cameron Sutton, a lot of big names in the defensive backfield. So I thought the receivers handled themselves really well, including against some of those tough guys. Zay Jones had the biggest game, I think, in the actual Senior Bowl on Saturday. Had one touchdown, had two more called back, but really impressive. He's got really good size at almost 6'2", 202 pounds. Not really good size. He's not a monster, but seemed to do everything pretty well. His speed jumps off, but he also seemed to have some pretty good polish. So Jones really impressed me, as did Cooper Kupp out of Eastern Washington. I don't think there was any guy who was winning more with his routes and in terms of his separation ability throughout the week than Cooper Kupp. And showed some versatility back there fielding punts. Not quite as big as Zay Jones, maybe not quite as dynamic either, but another guy who really helped his cause. Just keeping with the pass catcher theme, you know, everyone talked about O.J. Howard going into the week, and I thought he was the best player in Mobile or the most impressive prospect. But I'll tell you what, Evan Engram out of Mississippi, a different type of tight end, more of a move H-back type, 6'3", 236. Caught everything thrown his direction, showed some big playability down the seam, showed some electricity after the catch. Evan Engram is going to look really good in the right NFL offense, I think. So just sticking with the offensive players, I have one more on my list, Kareem Hunt out of Toledo. I like the way that he not only, you know, caught it, but the way he, not only the way that he ran the ball from the backfield, but the way he was catching it, the way he was running routes. Showed some burst and some creativity. Hunt was as impressive as any back I saw down in Mobile. So at 5'10 and a half, 208 pounds, you know, decent enough size. And I think he looks like some of that Mac production may be able to translate. We'll see. Definitely opened up my eyes. So quickly, a few guys on defense before I get to the GM hirings, starting with Hassan Reddick out of Temple. Played a lot on the edge for the Owls, but showed an ability to stand up and play on his feet and even retreat a little bit in Mobile. Also still showing some real instincts and some explosiveness rushing the passer. So I think his versatility definitely stood out, as did Cam Sutton, who I mentioned earlier out of Tennessee, the cornerback who set the Vols record for pass breakups during his time in Knoxville. Also showed some safety ability, though, as the South lineup got banged up, especially at safety. We saw Sutton take place in a lot of drills there. So if you're looking for that versatility, he was another guy that stood out, 5'11", 182 pounds. I mentioned Nate Peterman. I just thought his polish, you know, maybe a second day guy now. You know, some other sort of toolsy prospects down there, and you know, the kid out of Cal, Baker, certainly, and Josh Dobbs out of Tennessee has some really nice athleticism and a big arm. But just in terms of the accuracy and the decision making and the mechanics, I thought that Peterman was definitely above everyone else. So a couple more defenders now for you. I don't know if I'm going to get his name right, but the Connecticut safety, Obi Melifonwu. I don't know if I got it right. I can get his measurements right. 6'4", 219 pounds. This dude moves like you would not expect for a 6'4", 219 pounder. Impressed me quite a bit. Saw him coming downhill with some authority. Saw him going up and getting some footballs and flashing some ball skills as well. So he's a really intriguing guy who I really think helped his cause. Again, at that size, it's unique for the safety position, but with that agility as well, definitely stood out to me quite a bit. Terrell Basham, an edge player out of Ohio, I thought was one of the more exciting edge rushers, pass rushers in Mobile. Definitely showed the ability to, of course, bend the edge and get around the corner. Some finishing ability, was also asked to cover it a little bit and didn't look out of place doing so. So he was also in my top 10 winners of the week. And That pretty much rounds it out. My number 10, and again, these numbers don't really matter, so I don't know why I'm saying that. I'm reading off a list right now. But Jahleel Johnson, the 6'3", 309-pound defensive tackle out of Iowa, a really nice first step, and was probably the handed out the biggest hit I saw all week when he stopped Devian Smith, the Michigan power back, in the backfield. Kind of eerily similar. I believe Johnson recorded a safety on Smith during the season. And when I asked him, he said, I don't know what it is about Michigan, but he's had some of his best success against the big-time Wolverines program. So looking for an interior pass rusher with a little bit of versatility, some nice size and burst. I think Jahleel Johnson was someone who stood out and likely helped his cause in the eyes of NFL evaluators. So those are some guys, and again, check out the reports from Mobile. We had at ProFootballWeekly.com some other names in there as well. Before we bring in Habarkish, as promised, I just wanted to take another minute or two and give you my thoughts on the big hirings, and I guess I'll go in the order that they came down. Chris Ballard, the new general manager of the Colts, they interviewed, I want to say, five or six candidates and ultimately settled on Ballard, and I think that was a really nice decision. Kind of an interesting juxtaposition between what the Colts and the Niners did. I think the Colts hired the one, the GM, the decision maker with as much, with as long of a track record or as many good qualifications as anyone on either list. So really good in that regard. And Ballard has been considered a fast riser. Our Greg Gabriel said he knew. Actually, Greg Gabriel was responsible for hiring Chris Ballard when Gabriel was the college scouting director for the Bears. And he said he knew within a couple years that Ballard was special, that he had a unique eye for talent. He's worked under the great John Dorsey for the past four seasons and has had a big role in the drafting of several Pro Bowlers, including Marcus Peters and Tyreek Hill recently. Travis Kelce has showed an ability to help out on the trade side with the Alex Smith deal, obviously, and in free agency with Jeremy Maclin and then retaining some of their own. So I think he's got a really nice diverse kind of skill set, if you will, heading into his first GM post. And obviously he already has the hardest part of the situation figured out with Andrew Luck. But Ballard also said the right things. It's not about one person, pointed out that he needs to build a better team around Luck. Obviously that was what led to Ryan Grigson's downfall. So a nice move. And it was unorthodox in that it took a while for Irsay to decide that Grigson wasn't the guy and then turn to Ballard. So definitely caught some people off guard and sort of the process, the way it played out. But Chris Ballard is undoubtedly ready for this opportunity. And again, inheriting Andrew Luck is a great thing, obviously. Inheriting Chuck Pagano, not so much. Nothing against Pagano. Maybe they'll make it work together, but it doesn't often. So we'll see what happens in 2017. And if not, I would imagine that Chris Ballard is going to go out and find his own guy next offseason if it doesn't work out with Pagano. And by work out, I think that probably means getting back to the playoffs in the lowly AFC South when you have Andrew Luck. So we shall see, but a nice move for the Colts. On the flip side, I don't know what the 49ers are doing. I mean, it was ultimately Kyle Shanahan that hired John Lynch, and the reports state that John Lynch actually was the one who offered his own candidacy to Kyle Shanahan in a phone call. And I just don't know what to make of it. Shanahan is 37 and has never done this before. He has control of the 53-man roster. John Lynch is 45 and has never done this before. He is going to oversee an entire personnel department. I do think that Lynch's first move was very sharp in bringing over Adam Peters, the former John Elway lieutenant, also spent time in New England. I believe his last post with the Broncos was college scouting director, has a lot of familiarity on the personnel side, and I think that's a very, very important move as Lynch tries to get his feet underneath him. We'll see if now he's able to go out and either retain Tom Gamble and or hire Mark Dominic. Those are two other names that have been floated around, and it's hard to say. I mean, I think it's critical that Lynch surrounds himself with experienced guys, Lynch and Shanahan, since they have not done this before. And then at the same time, it's already a little unusual in the way that Lynch and Shanahan are going to kind of put their heads together on personnel decisions. And the more people you bring in, maybe the harder it is to build a consensus. I don't know. All I know is that everyone that wants to compare this to what the Broncos did with John Elway, you know, it makes sense. A Hall of Fame caliber player wraps up his playing career and heads into an executive position. Yes, that there are parallels there. But people may want to turn their nose up at the fact that Elway spent 6 years overseeing the AFL's Colorado Crush. They shouldn't, because Elway is on record as saying that was huge in his development and in his experience building. And John Lynch doesn't have anything like that. He went straight to the Fox booth after his playing career wrapped up and straight to the 49ers from the Fox booth, where he enters one of the most dysfunctional ownership situations. And again, a head coach who is the executive of the year in the NFL, the assistant coach of the year in the NFL in 2016, but who has never done this before. The one other big difference is, yes, John Elway inherited Tim Tebow. He needed to fix that mess. He also inherited, I believe, Ryan Clady, Demaryius Thomas, Eric Decker, among others. So there were some nice building blocks in place already. I think they were 4-12 the year he came in. It's a different story for the Niners. Obviously, 2-14 coming off the worst season in franchise history, and just not a lot of jars on the shelf, if you will, at all. You know, Joe Staley's getting up there in years. Torrey Smith hasn't worked out. Navarro Bowman's coming off another serious injury. Carlos Hyde, I think, probably entering a contract year. So just not a lot of pieces to work with, and obviously no stability at quarterback. So it'll be very fascinating to see how they handle that move. Obviously, they're going to have a ton of money to spend and the number two overall pick. So some nice resources to try and get that thing rebuilt. And I didn't even mention the 6 year contracts for Lynch and Shanahan that Jed York decided on. He really maybe didn't have any choice, because I think the part of this I haven't talked about yet is I think there was some desperation involved. Remember all the people that withdrew their name from consideration for both the GM post and the head coaching position after meeting with Jed York. So, and again, Lynch volunteered himself for the job. Maybe the 6 year pact was what it was going to take to get it done. York has also admitted that he is embarrassed about the way the franchise has devolved in recent years, and frankly, he should be. He's been such a a big part of the falling apart, the unraveling. So, wanted to show a real commitment and a real commitment to being patient with these 6 year deals. But we have to call it like it is. The most inexperienced front office team brass in the NFL got an unprecedented 6 year deals, both of them. So I've got my doubts. And again, Jed York's decision making in the past hasn't been great. Obviously, he had to sign off on this, even if it was Shanahan's hiring. So I've got a lot of questions about this. I have a lot of doubts, but I also think it is going to be a ton of fun to see how it works. So, without further ado, that's my thoughts on the GM hires and, on the Senior Bowl. And, now let's get Hub's thoughts from Houston on Super Bowl 51.
And now we head to Houston to catch up with the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkish. Hub, how is, well, first of all, what number Super Bowl is this? I was guessing 30-something. Do you have an exact count?
Yeah, my first Super Bowl was 13, so this is my 39th consecutive Super Bowl.
That is an awesome stat. It gets me every year. And Hub, how is this? How's the host city doing? First of all, Houston is hosting for the first time what since '94? I think that was the Patriots' second Super Bowl. I'm guessing a lot has changed. How is the logistics of the week working out thus far?
Yeah, I believe you said '94. I think you meant '04, which would be correct. I think it was the one where Vinatieri kicked the field goal to beat Carolina.
Thank you. Yes,
but. You know, Houston has been great. The weather has been pretty much perfect since everybody started arriving Sunday and Monday, mid-70s and sunny. It's supposed to get a little cooler and more overcast the next couple days, but nothing to worry about. And, of course, there is a retractable roof on the stadium. The hospitality is fantastic. The setup in terms of covering the game for the media has been very convenient. It is a little tricky because they've got their Super Bowl experience kind of located between the hotels that surround the convention center. So there is some extra walking and barriers and metal detectors to go through on a regular basis. But for the most part, it's all been great. One thing that is very different, or actually two things that are very different this year, is that this is the first of my 38 prior Super Bowls, or the first time after my 38 prior Super Bowls, where Roger Goodell's press conference was on Wednesday instead of Friday. No explanation from anyone with the league as to why they did that. Some people speculated it might just be because there were less people in town to question him. Don't really buy that. The media does tend to get in town by Wednesday. It was a smaller crowd, but there were still plenty of questions, and he was grilled pretty good. It was not a friendly crowd for the most part. And then the other big change is that with the teams available to the media Wednesday and Thursday of Super Bowl week every year, for as long as they've been doing the Super Bowl, it's always been one team from 8 to 9:30 and then the other team from 10:15 to 11:45. This year, for the first time, the media gets to see the Falcons from 8 to, I guess it's about 9:15, 9:20, and then has to go back and see the Patriots at 4 in the afternoon until about 5:15 or 5:20. And I did as much investigating on that one as I could. A lot of people speculated it might just be Belichick and the Patriots messing with everybody, but in fact it was not. It was the league's decision. The problem they've had for years is that the home team always got to choose which slot they wanted. The home team every year had taken the early slot, and whichever team got that second slot from like 10:15 to 11:30, it pretty much really screwed up their usual practice routine, their daily routine, their meetings. And so this year the league created an option for the visiting team to either go at 10:15 or wait until 4, and the Patriots took advantage of it. So it is a big change in the Super Bowl routine. Shouldn't have any impact on the game. Doesn't really matter to anybody except the media, and I don't really have a problem with it, but it is a significant change in an event that doesn't usually have much change.
All right, interesting. So I guess it gives you an opportunity to, you know, meet some deadlines in between news conferences, and maybe it doesn't stack up. I don't know. I'm trying to find silver lining. I don't know if that's a positive or a negative. And frankly, I don't know if our listeners care all that much, but they do care about the Roger Goodell State of the League address. Hub, you said it was a bit testy. I would have expected as much. It also sounds like the NFL could only do so much to insulate Roger from some pretty pointed questions, many of them coming from the New England area, I would imagine.
Yeah, there definitely was. And just to get back to that other point for a moment, you're absolutely right. I don't think the listeners care at all about the media or us doing our job. The reason that is significant, though, is it's a radical change in terms of the team's schedules. And so right. We'll see if the Patriots' performance is impacted in any way on Sunday by this brand new routine. And I guess if it is, we won't know if that's what did it anyway. But
right.
Yeah, Goodell's press conference was testy at best, and he didn't do himself any favors by being his usual very certain, somewhat arrogant stuff, and actually even presented a few alternate facts, if that's become a new part of the American English lexicon. Insisted that the courts held that Brady and the Patriots did cheat, when in fact no court ever held that, because there was never any reasonable hearing or trial. The courts did uphold his right to punish them in the way they did, but Roger wasn't willing to settle for that. He continually, and even answered a few questions who called him on it, tried to suggest that the courts had said that in fact the Patriots did deflate footballs, and of course everybody knows that's not true. He also was, of course, queried on the situation with the Oakland Raiders and their Las Vegas move coming apart. And in fairness to him, I thought he handled that one pretty well, because he pointed out that the league hasn't even had their hearings or their question and answer sessions with the Raiders in Vegas to determine if they would let the Raiders go there. So it was a nice way to dodge the real issue, which is this is something that Pro Football Weekly has been writing about and predicting for months now, knew this was going to happen, because Mark Davis is just not the businessman that some of these other owners are, and he had a deal that was built on a house of cards, and once he realized that Sheldon Adelson wasn't going to be in unless he got a piece of the team, and Davis told him he couldn't have a piece of the team, Adelson laughed at him and walked away. Once he was out, Goldman Sachs was out for their $350 million. So what they have now is a deal that would allow the greatest public funding of an NFL stadium in history, $750 million from the state of Nevada, But even if Davis can come up with his $300 million, which nobody's sure he can, they're still a billion short of building the stadium, and Mark Davis would still need to come up with the relocation fee. So nobody put it in these terms, but the Vegas move for the moment appears to be dead in the water unless they can find some new money. And the one part that that Goodell did speak to is if it were a casino or another gambling interest to step up, he suggested the league would probably not approve that. And he did make the point that as far as playing in Vegas, that's one thing for the NFL. As far as having ownerships whose money comes from legalized gambling, he said he's quite sure that's something that the owners would frown on. So he was also asked if there's any chance that that could mean that the Raiders could end up in San Diego. And I thought that was, to be honest with you, kind of a silly question, because if San Diego was willing to build a stadium, the Chargers would still be there. And that was the point that he made. So they're very much in flux right now. He also took some questions from the people in Los Angeles who, to be honest with you, aren't that thrilled about suddenly going from no NFL teams to two. And he struggled to deal with that. But as I said at the top, typical Roger Goodell fashion, he pointed out that everything the NFL owners and he does is right, and anybody who thinks they're not is wrong. And so there was a fair amount of grumbling from both media and, league personnel and front office folks who attend this press conference as well. Coming out, there was not a lot of satisfaction gained in any of the answers.
So, Hub, I've got a few follow-ups on the Goodell presser, but I have to ask, if I'm hearing this correctly, if the NFL was never going to allow Sheldon Adelson and his, casino interests to have any potential ownership in the Raiders, and Adelson was never going to be a part of this deal, if that wasn't going to happen, how ill-conceived was this deal on Mark Davis's part to begin with? And it sounds like it really was just a waste of everyone's time, if I'm understanding these stipulations correctly.
Well, it's a good question, Arthur, and again, this is what we've been reporting, is that it was a terribly ill-conceived deal on Davis's part, and it was highly naive. Just assumed that Adelson wanted to do this for whatever reason, out of the goodness of his heart, and because he was rich, and because, he wanted to be affiliated with the Raiders, and anybody who's ever done a deal like this knew that wasn't going to happen. Now, in addition to that, because it had never been formally presented to the league, Adelson had not been rejected. Goodell was saying what he expected might have happened. He didn't put it in terms of Adelson, but talked about any new money that Davis might go looking for. So Mark Davis believed that Adelson was going to invest in this stadium because he is a civic leader in Las Vegas, and that he might be able to benefit from his investment by helping to build the stadium, but never wanted to give up any equity in the ball club. He also didn't want to give up any control of the stadium, even though Adelson and Vegas were going to pay for it. And I keep saying Vegas. It's actually the state of Nevada. It's not Las Vegas. And so it was a badly ill-conceived. It wasn't an ill-conceived deal so much as one that he simply didn't have the assets to be able to pull off. And nobody's saying that Vegas is dead. We'll see what happens. There is plenty of non-gambling money in Nevada. But for the moment, there's no deal because they've only got half the money they need to build the stadium.
Hub, I know that both Robert Kraft and Bob McNair were in attendance for the State of the League address from Goodell. To my understanding, Arthur Blank wasn't there. Are either of those things unusual that the other two were and that he wasn't, or vice versa?
No, actually, you know more about it than I do, because I didn't realize that Kraft and McNair were there. As I said, it was a smaller crowd, but still a big crowd. The commissioner's press conference typically does attract a number of NFL owners, front office types. They're not necessarily all there. It's not required attendance. There's the usuals that you would expect to notice. I didn't notice Jerry Jones or see Paul Allen or Dan Snyder. And for that matter, I didn't see Bob Kraft, who apparently you've heard reports was there. So I don't think I would read anything into that. It's just a question of taste and what they're doing with their time while they're enjoying Super Bowl week.
And what about Goodell was asked if he's had any discussions with Tom Brady. I believe he said that he doesn't view the situation or the overall dynamic with the Patriots, an organization that he said he had the utmost respect for, and in his one of the best, I don't know exactly how he put it, but he had a lot of compliments for the Patriots, and then at the same time he said that there was nothing awkward about the relationship, and that if he is invited to Foxborough, he would be happy to attend a game again. How ridiculous is that? He should have been prepared to be asked why he wasn't in Foxborough and why he went to Atlanta 2 weeks in a row. Didn't that kind of pass it off on to his good friend Robert Kraft?
Yeah, a couple things there, Arthur. He was asked if he'd had any conversation with Brady, and he refused to answer that question. He said he doesn't discuss his conversations with players and people in the league, and he flat out wouldn't say one way or the other if he's talked to Tom Brady since, I guess, what would have been their last hearing. As far as his tap dancing and his cop-outs about New England, let's call it what it was. It was a load of crap, you know, he knows he's not welcome in New England. It would not be a good look or a positive outcome for the NFL if the commissioner showed up there and was booed out of the stadium, which is what would happen. There were angry members of the New England media who were, you know, trying to be journalists but asking these pointed questions because it's what their readers, viewers, and listeners want to know and expected to hear. And Goodell basically brushed it all off as it's water under the bridge. And as far as he's concerned, that, you know, he understands that the Patriots may not agree, but he still believes he did the right thing. He takes no responsibility. And, you know, eventually they just ended the press conference. It's usually an hour. It was only 45 minutes today. You know, the Patriots stuff was not the only difficult tone that he took. He was asked hard questions about TV ratings during the course of the season. He was asked hard questions about the gambling situation, and he was asked very difficult questions from people from San Diego who were very upset. There was very little positive about the meeting. They tried to paint the big win today as the announcement that there will be another game in Mexico next year, and it's a little surprising to me. It'll be the Raiders and the Patriots. Now, obviously, the Patriots have agreed to that, so there is communication between Robert and Jonathan Kraft in the league office. Why they're sending the Raiders a second year in a row is a bit of a mystery. I guess they may be the most popular team down there, but they don't send teams 2 years in a row to London, so why they're doing it in Mexico, I don't know. But it was the closest thing to anything being positive that they were able to pull off today. And, you know, quite frankly, the bulk of the crowd wasn't all that impressed with that.
Hey, Hub, in the load of crap department, I think my favorite nugget may have been Roger Goodell talking about Thursday night football. Said the quality of the game is good and that injuries are actually less on Thursday than on Sunday, and that package absolutely is expected to remain. Is that all the way you heard it, at least?
Well, he didn't use the word remain, but he did say that they are
commitment.
Fully committed to it.
Right.
Yes,
excuse me.
They're fully committed to it. He pointed out, and I assume that this is factually correct, that it is the second highest rated primetime show on television. Obviously, he was referring to the games carried either on CBS and NBC. It certainly wasn't that highly rated on the games that only appeared on the NFL Network. And then he started selling the stuff about the injuries and quality of play, which, you know, I mean, again, the podcasts are kind of like cable, so I'll say it again. That's obviously a load of crap. You know, I mean, the games were awful. And he even tried to sell the competitiveness of the games. It's like he never watched one. You know, people were looking around the room at each other saying, what's this guy talking about? But it appears to be the attitude of Americans these days that anything you want to make true, just say it, refuse to admit it's not true, and it somehow becomes true. I think I said it near the top. I'll say it again. Roger Goodell filled his press conference with all kinds of alternative facts today. And much like other people using alternative facts these days, nobody was buying these either.
All right. Well, we've got what looks like it should be a great Super Bowl, and I obviously want to spend a few minutes discussing that. But just to close on the Goodell news conference subject, was there any chance at all that he was going to say anything when given the opportunity to share his opinion or the league's stance on President Trump's executive order and the Muslim ban? We've seen the NBA and some of its most respected leaders speak out. I didn't necessarily expect Goodell to say anything, but was there any chance, and were you disappointed nonetheless?
Well, I'm not going to say I was disappointed because, you know, he may not be fair to us, but I think we need to be fair to him. And you know, he probably has his own personal views, and then he has to be careful taking both a business and editorial and political
right.
position for the league that might not be supported by all 32 owners. And,
right.
you know, when you realize you've got 32 billionaires there, we know that Robert Kraft is a lifelong Democrat who calls Trump one of his best friends. You know, and you're going to find a lot of guys like that. But he was going to be in a no-win, you know, with his 32 owners if he went one way or the other. So I think that's understandable. What was particularly intriguing, though, and this was not something that I quite frankly was aware of going into the press conference, because I try and interview as many guys as I can and use my own quotes wherever possible, but one thing that happens at the Super Bowl is pretty much everything a player or a coach says is transcribed and is made available to all the registered media via a quotes feed. And apparently the Monday night fiasco, don't get me started on that, there was a lot of political questioning of players and coaches. And a number of media are upset that it was all redacted from the transcriptions. The full transcriptions of both teams, all the players Monday night, there were absolutely no quotes or any answers to any of the questions about politics. And when asked about it, Goodell said, you know, that's not something that I get involved in, and I wasn't aware of it. Well, I don't think anybody in the room believed that was true. There's no way that the NFL made a decision not to, or, you know, to edit that out of the event without Roger Goodell being aware of it. So
yeah,
it was
yeah.
another thing that really left people scratching their heads. So on one hand, I do understand why he wouldn't want to get involved in that, and I respect his position on that. But it certainly appears that he falsely answered that question, and that I don't respect. I mean, I would have been fine if he'd have said, we just decided that it had nothing to do with the Super Bowl. Some people wouldn't have liked it, but at least you could live with that. But to pretend you're not aware of it, there's no way that the decision like that was made by some lower-level exec in the NFL.
Yeah, and my guess, and just one more, since we're you mentioned his blissful unawareness of the political redactments, but also I believe that there was a pretty high-profile credential that was revoked, Barstool Sports. I think Pro Football Talks, Michael David Smith asked Goodell about that specifically, the removal of one media member or the unwillingness to credential him for the event. Goodell also said he was unaware of that. And again, I think people are pretty familiar with Barstool Sports, and that was also a little bit hard to believe. But Hub, that was a lot of Goodell. Sorry.
Yeah, there's actually an element of that, though, Arthur, that again, this is you know, telling both sides of the story. You're right. That was his answer. I think that's possible, you know, that he might not have been aware that there's 5,500 credentials administered. Yeah. That could be something that someone high up, possibly Joe Woodcock, their director of you know, communications these days, could have made a decision on his own, because there was an incident, I don't know if it was earlier this year or last year, I guess it would have had to have been earlier this year, where four members of Barstool Sports, I don't know if they're actual media or who they were, showed up and for the most part staged what amounted to a sit-in at the NFL offices in New York, and eventually had to be removed by the police. And so that's not really something that a creditable sports organization would do. Whether, in fact, that was why they were not credentialed for this event, I don't know. You know, I'd only be speculating, but that's what some people have talked about. It could even be argued that it might be justified if that was it. But I find it impossible to believe that, you know, literally hundreds or thousands of words were redacted from transcriptions because they dealt with politics and Goodell didn't know. I do find it possible to believe that he wasn't aware of one organization that didn't get credentials. And I'll even go a step further on this one. If it was up to me, I wouldn't credential them either, because they're not really sports media. What they did was inappropriate, and you know, I would understand if the league felt that there had to at least be some recompense for that, if not flat-out punishment. Now that it's been made public, my suspicion is that they will get a second chance somewhere along the line. Apparently, two reporters from, I guess it's a website, two reporters from Barstool Sports without credentials still made it into the whatever they now call this Monday night thing.
Yep.
And I guess there was a little bit of tumult about that, too.
Yeah, one of them, I believe, asking a Danny Woodhead question to Bill Belichick. So obviously didn't really add much to the evening, but, you know, some troubling elements to the press conference, no less. Hub, there is an actual football game taking place in just a couple days. There hasn't been anything in the way of bulletin board material, really, that I'm aware of, or anyone putting their foot in their mouth otherwise. I remember, you know, Chris Culliver a few years ago. It seems like there's someone every year. There's always something that causes a bit of a distraction off the field. Assuming I'm correct and there really hasn't been anything like that, what's the tone of these two teams as far as you've been able to gauge, and other just kind of impressions, the first-timers of the Falcons and the Patriots who've been here, gosh, what now, for a seventh time?
Well, you know, it's interesting to me with the Patriots first, because everybody assumes that this is the crusty old veteran club that, like you said,
right. Not
done
for
this
many
a bunch
of, them.
Of time.
Yep.
Actually, they won just 2 years ago, and just 2 years later, only 23 of those 53 players are still here. There are 30 players on the Patriots' 53-man roster who were not on the Super Bowl team 2 years ago. Now, that said, the other 23 obviously are a lot of the key pieces and parts, and so it gives them a big advantage. In fact, Tom Brady by himself has more Super Bowl experience with his 7 Super Bowls than the entire Falcons roster. So that tells you a little bit about the gap here in preparedness. But regardless of whether it's 23 or 43 or 53 Patriots, this team is so well coached and so well prepared that you know they're not going to stumble in anything silly at the Super Bowl. I think the one guy that everybody probably had their eye on was Martellus Bennett. And so far, Marty is having fun, as only he can, but being very careful as to the subject matter he wades into. As far as the
podium for Marty Hub? He must have been beside himself.
I don't know if he was or not, and to be honest with you, I got stuck doing some other radio work, so I don't know if he had the podium today. He didn't have it yesterday.
Okay.
I know that, and there'll also be a podium tomorrow, and they try and spread that around. So
right.
My guess is he will get one at some point. It's really all about the crowds they attract, and if you don't give them one and you try and put them at one of those 10 top tables and there's 100 media trying to get at him, it messes it up for all of his teammates. So my guess is he will get a podium at some point. But as far as the Falcons, what's been interesting to me, these kids are so young, I mean, particularly on defense, and they're all kind of starry-eyed and just, gee gosh, and having a great time. And, you know, I think they'd be afraid to step into anything that might be controversial. And I'm not saying afraid in a bad way. I'm really impressed by this Falcons team and the way they've come to this. So the answer is no. You know, not on either side of the field, or either sideline or locker room, nothing even, you know, close to controversial. The hottest topic amongst the Atlanta Falcons, the people are discussing, is the DJ contests that Dan Quinn likes to have for different people putting the music playlist together every day during practice and around the facility. So very benign, very football focused, everybody just very excited to be at the Super Bowl.
All right, very cool. And has so it sounds like it's been kind of, you know, all business at this point. That leads me to believe you probably haven't sort of swayed from your initial thoughts on the way this game was going to play out. As I mentioned at the top of the podcast, we are going to do a second one, hopefully dropping Thursday, with some more X's and O's and matchup type stuff. So I don't want to get into a ton of that, but maybe just your thoughts, because this is the only time they'll hear them on a podcast, our Pro Football Weekly audience. How does Sunday play out? And are you sticking with the prediction that I already know of, or are you having any feelings like you may change something?
Well, you know, these two offenses are too good to get shut down. It's just not going to happen. The Falcons are the best offense in the NFL, with the possible exception of the Patriots. Falcons' numbers are a little bit better, but you got to remember Brady didn't play 4 games. So I would argue these are the two best offenses in the NFL, and when they're on their games, I don't think the Bears of 85 or the Steelers of the 70s are going to shut them out or shut them down. So it's going to be a high-scoring game. I know the total I've seen has been pretty static at 59. I'd be very surprised if they don't score more than 59 points in this game. That said, however, the Falcons' defense, the way these kids have played, really kind of since the bye, you know, it was week 6 that they put the 3 rookies out there together for the first time, Keanu Neal, Deion Jones, and Devondre Campbell. Of course, Deion Jones ended up their leading tackler, also their leading interceptor, tied for the team lead in tackles for loss. Keanu Neal, the second leading tackler. Campbell, not as active, but he tied Neal and another undrafted rookie free agent pool for five tackles for loss. They're making big plays. They are built just like the Seahawks were 4, 5, 6 years ago. They have incredible speed and athleticism. And I think that, you know, just on the strength of Belichick and McDaniels and Brady's scheme, Patriots will do some business on offense, but I think the Falcons will make a couple plays. They're going to surprise them a few times. And then you flip them around, as clockwork and machine-like as that Falcon offense has been, the New England Patriots are number one in the NFL this year in scoring defense. They, you know, they'll let you go up and down between the 20s, but once you get in the red zone, forget it. And if you think back, that's how they beat Seattle in the Super Bowl 2 years ago. So I expect it to be a lot of fun. I expect it to be a little bit of a shootout. But if this is possible, it could be a shootout where a couple defensive plays are the difference in the game. And at the end of the day, I've already changed my mind three times since a week ago Sunday. I keep going back and forth, but I've kind of settled in. I can't go against Brady and Belichick, but I do think that this is going to be a 1 or 2 point game. I think that they'll either, you know, score late and then hold the Falcons off, or maybe they'll get the ball last and score late. I think it's going to be a real tight one. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And in the end, it's just too hard to take all these rookies against Belichick and Brady.
Well, I hope you're right, Hub. The playoffs thus far, with the exception of that one game in Dallas, has been anything but tight or particularly fun. Favorites 8-2, plus 147 point differential in the playoffs. So all anyone wants is a competitive Super Bowl. I think we're going to get one, too. Hub, I'd probably say the most important question for last. Tell me about the nightlife in Houston. Have you been to any great parties yet? Have you went to any really good restaurants? Are you going to do anything fun? Because I'm here living vicariously through you down there.
Well, boy, are you going to be disappointed. people are going to buy this, I'm sure, although it's early as we record this. You know, it's the weekend is not here yet. I have not been out of the room at night yet. You know, one of the things with what we're doing at Pro Football Weekly right now is, unfortunately, you and Kevin stayed behind in Chicago because we're trying to get the Draft Preview magazine to bed at the same time that we're covering the Super Bowl. That said, being here solo with just a few of our stringers, not getting down churning copy until 10, 11, 12 at night. So I will say that the way this is set up, there's basically, it's almost like there's two downtown sections in Houston, and the convention center where all the media is housed is kind of the business downtown as opposed to the party or nightlife downtown. And so I think as the week goes on, you'll hear more about the nightlife. Obviously, great food, great barbecue down here. As I said, the weather has been very nice. And the people are fantastic. You know, Texas hospitality, it's an old wives' tale. It's also an old truism. You know, the greeting so far has been outstanding. The Texans fans are everywhere. The competing teams fans tend not to come into town much before Thursday, Friday, Saturday. So by the time we get to that next podcast, we'll have a better feel for it. But so far, pretty much all business. The partying is waiting until later in the week.
All right. Well, that is acceptable. I've watched all the copy come in, and that makes sense. It looks like you are working hard down there. We appreciate it. Keep up the great work. And tell all our listeners, of course, I will tell our listeners to make sure they're following you on Twitter, at Hub Arkish, and also all of your columns this week and other pieces from the Super Bowl at ProFootballWeekly.com. Hub, I'll let you get back to it. I'm sorry I kept you so long, but a good conversation. Enjoy the rest of the week, and we will talk to you very soon.
All right, I have to ask a lot of our followers to forgive me from the Twitter side. I've gotten roped into some political commentary in the last week or two that I keep trying to avoid. I tell football stories, and everybody says, oh, yeah, you're taking a shot at this guy or a shot at that guy. And while I try not to do that, I don't also like being accused of being on the wrong side. So we're having some fun with it. And you know, hopefully things will get better for everybody, whichever side you're on.
Well, I am all in favor of that, but I will say you shouldn't apologize because it's too important, and you shouldn't stick to sports with the all the craziness going on in the world. It's important for people to be speaking their minds as well. So, Hub, we do appreciate it again, and we will look forward to talking to you as the week progresses. Take it easy, and thanks again.
All right, Arthur. Take care.